Գումտրեք SPS հայերենը։ Հավելյալ հետաքրքրական հաղորդումներ կգտնեք վերկայքին վրա sps.com.au/armenian.
It was a busy and sometimes hectic year for the Armenian National Committee of Australia. To give us a summary of 2019, we have online Hayk Kayserian, Executive Director of ANCA. Hayk, welcome to SPS Armenian.
Thank you, Vahe. Good to be with you.
Hayk, let's start from the latest, the acknowledgement of the Armenian Genocide by US Congress and the expectations of the Australian Armenian community. Do you think with Congress's decision there is hope for a positive outcome in Australia?
Yeah, look, I think first of all I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly congratulate my colleagues at the Armenian National Committee of America. We can't gloss over or underestimate how big a deal it is when the representatives of a superpower collectively and so comprehensively recognize the Armenian Genocide as fact, reject Turkish denialism in such a profound way. And I think that is because over many years, the Armenian National Committee of America have stuck to their guns, have understood the scene, have gotten over the disappointments, which probably reached their pinnacle when Barack Obama went back on his word in 2009, I believe it was, and decided that rather than focusing on a president who is voted on by 50% of voters in the country, they're going to focus on the parliament, which is voted by 100% of the public. And what ended up coming as a result of that shift is a shift in paradigm for the Armenian cause. The United States recognizing the Armenian Genocide, House of Representatives 405-11, and the Senate 100-0, means that there was never really a debate on fact. There wasn't a debate on whether the genocide was what it was. There was only an issue about will, and the fact that our team over there were able to establish the relationships and make people understand through information about what our ancestors went through. When the opportunity arose, they were able to capitalize on it by introducing the motion and seeing such a phenomenal success. So I wanted to start by congratulating them for what is a genuinely big deal for the Armenian cause. I think it's a turning point. I think it's an opportunity for Australia, but I think it's also an opportunity more globally for justice for the Armenian genocide. The way I would define where we are in terms of Armenian Australians is not dissimilar to where our colleagues were before these resolutions were passed in the United States Congress. We also have, I believe, the majority of the parliament, be that the House of Representatives or the Senate, knowing that the Armenian genocide is fact, and debate has never existed really as long as I've been involved in this cause on the historical reality of the Armenian genocide. What has existed is obviously the geopolitical nature of the beast. Now, where similarities can also be drawn is public opinion. I think public opinion in the US in recent years, since Obama's rejection in particular, the centenary of the genocide, got to the point where even the majority of the American public who were knowledgeable on this issue knew that the Armenian genocide was fact, but obviously they hadn't taken the step. I believe in the last 18 months or so, the Australian public, who are obviously knowledgeable on this issue, have also been taken along the same path because of opportunities that have arisen to make this issue public. Just in the last year, for example, we've had the Alan Jones take up this issue when Scott Morrison performed the backflip with his Armenian Genocide commemoration statement in April. We've also had the newspapers write about it, publish op-eds from people like Dr. Stepan Kerkesharian to say that the Armenian genocide is nothing but fact and Australia should reject this foreign gag order that exists from the Turkish dictatorship, and it should recognize the Armenian genocide for what it was, and nobody should be playing word games with the issue. You know, many will say, Alan Jones caters for part of the population. That's true. But we've also had, the Nine network of newspapers that don't always sing from the same hymn sheet as Alan Jones. We've had political parties and members of political parties that have made this issue front and center at different occasions over the last 18 months, which is also something that wasn't the case before that, which I think is also shaping public opinion in Australia. We've had two debates in the parliament where over 15, 20 members of parliament in the House of Representatives called on the Armenian Genocide to be recognised by Australia in the context, of course, of Australia's first major humanitarian relief effort and last year's 70th anniversary of the UN Genocide Convention. And that included people of the major parties, minor parties. We've got people like the Greens, who are on the opposite side of politics to where Alan Jones would probably be, also calling for the genocide to be recognised as party policy. We've got the Centre Alliance doing the same. We've got the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies calling for Australia to recognise the genocide. We've got the Australian Christian Lobby calling for Australia to recognise the genocide. So the scene is set, whether that be in Parliament or in the public sphere, to have this issue dealt with. And I believe we're at the stage where we're looking for opportunities like one came obviously with the Kurdish issue that Trump was dealing with in the United States to occur here in Australia. When Erdogan made comments in March, that was an opportunity to push this issue, and we did. We did get some public opinion shift as a result of that. When Scott Morrison's backflip occurred, that was another opportunity. This US resolution passing the Senate following the comprehensive passing of the House presents another opportunity for us to remind our legislators that whatever the political processes are, we need to exercise those processes, and we need to bring Australia on the right side of history as the elected representatives of a public that knows the Armenian Genocide to be fact.
Hayk, is the ANZAC commemoration a major stumbling block, taking into account Prime Minister's words earlier this year?
Correct. Well, look, I believe it is. I think many people, including the Foreign Ministry, will not necessarily give credence to that theory because nobody wants to admit that they are being influenced in shaping Australia's foreign policy by the influence of a foreign dictatorship, and in this case, not just the influence, but the threat of a foreign dictatorship. As you correctly pointed out, Baher, during the Scott Morrison backflip debacle, a lot of attention was put to this issue to the extent that the Prime Minister was in Darwin in the Northern Territory facing the press when he was trying to promote one of his local candidates over there, and one of the journalists asked about this particular issue, calling his backflip out, saying, "You used to recognise this as genocide, what's changed?" And he did answer by making Turkey part of his reasoning and the fact that we have been working hard to make the Gallipoli pilgrimage go smoothly or work, and therefore it is important that I act as a prime minister and not a public member of society. Obviously, when he was a member of parliament and used the word genocide, he wasn't, you know, a public citizen. He was still a member of parliament, an elected member of office. But obviously, he was stumped by the question, and in his answer, he quite openly admitted that there was an issue there. We also remember in 2013, I mean, when the New South Wales Parliament was recognising the genocide for a second time, the press coverage that ensued included the Turkish consul to New South Wales openly stated on the ABC television that the visas of those who were part of the recognition process would not be granted if they wanted to visit Gallipoli and pay their respects to the ANZAC soldiers. We believe, obviously, that if the United States elected representatives can see past the threats of Turkey, and I believe they have as much reasons to make excuses for not recognising the genocide on sensitive foreign relations grounds, considering the Incirlik army base in Turkey is so pivotal to the US presence in the Middle East, I believe that Australia can see past that as well. I think that the Gallipoli threat is there. Probably the major thing that comes to the mind of an elected official part of the administration when they're talking about, you know, what should we release as a statement on April 24th. However, the time has come for for Australia to stand up to this foreign gag order, to say that enough is enough. You can no longer use our Anzac soldiers' graves as a bargaining chip to determine Australia's stance on a very important human rights issue, which is a current human rights issue. Australia needs to recognise the Armenian genocide, the genocide of the Greeks, the genocide of the Assyrians, because if you don't, you give impunity to genocides that are occurring today, like what we're seeing happen to the Rohingyas in Myanmar.
Hike, before summing up the year, there are two topics we haven't covered yet. One is the Youth Advocates Program. Could you give some information about the program and how young people can participate in the program?
Sure, Vahed. This is probably our feel-good week when it comes to the work that the Armenian National Committee does in any given 12 months. Last year, we launched the ANCAU Youth Advocates Program, and we continued that this year. As you pointed out, in November, we took around a dozen university-aged Armenians to Canberra in order to give them a crash course, so to speak, in advocacy, how to advocate for issues that are important to them, but also issues, obviously, that are important to Armenians, to see the work that the Armenian National Committee does. But it's not just theoretical. The reason we take them to Canberra is part of the program means they go to Parliament House. They have mock advocacy sessions with actual politicians where they're going and they're arguing about issues that are important to them. And the politicians very kindly play the part of the obstacle. So even with some politicians who might agree with the arguments that our students, our youth advocates are presenting to them, they will challenge them on those ideas in order to give them that real-life experience of advocacy. Not everybody, obviously, at the other end of the table agrees with you when you're advocating for your issues. We chose the topic this year of refugee policy, and the homework for our youth advocates was to familiarise themselves with the different policies that have existed in Australia and exist today, and for them individually, obviously, to come up with their own opinions on these issues. And they arrived in Canberra after receiving a crash course in advocacy from the head of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry Canberra office, so the Jewish community's equivalent of the ANC in Canberra. Their head was the one that delivered an advocacy 101 class, so to speak, to our youth advocates to give them a bit of an idea on some of the best practices in advocacy, some of her experiences as well. And then we headed over to Parliament House where they met with the Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, Christina Keneally, and also the Green spokesperson on refugee policy, who is Nick McKim. They were able to ask questions, challenge those policies, understand the issues, and also see the two exchange barbs and debates on the issue. Then they headed into the mock advocacy sessions with, I believe we met with 10 different politicians during that mock advocacy sessions, Liberal, Labor, Green. And we also organised for them to meet with Kaila Lusikyan, a Walkley award-winning journalist who covers politics in Canberra. So they were able to see how the press operates on a day-to-day basis in the press gallery in Canberra. They also met with a lobbyist, somebody from our board, Sasun Grigorian, who basically runs government relations in the Asia-Pacific for Salesforce, and he was able to show the private interests that exist in Parliament, and he was obviously a former advisor to a Premier of New South Wales. Therefore, he was able to give insight about how political operatives conduct their duties on a day-to-day basis. During the 2 days, they also attended question time, before which they met with Joel Fitzgibbon, who is currently the Shadow Agriculture Minister, is a former defence minister of this country, and also importantly for this issue, a former government whip. And him and his staff were able to take us through parliamentary procedures before we entered question time, so that the youth advocates were able to understand how question time and parliament actually works in the processes. Overall, I think the youth advocates thoroughly enjoyed the program. I think it would be good to get some of them on your program to get their own thoughts. But from what we were hearing, they were very fulfilled by the experience. Two days also, young Armenians, some of them had never met each other, university age, they were able to spend in Canberra together, develop friendships, and I believe that those friendships will last beyond this program. How people get involved, I believe halfway through next year, roughly around June, we'll release a form, an expression of interest form for those who want to participate. They'll answer a few questions in that application, what they're studying, why they're interested in doing this, what they're hoping to gain out of it, et cetera, et cetera. Our office obviously processes these applications, and then we induct those members who will be successful in meeting the criteria to participate in the program for next year, which will again be in October, November, depending on parliamentary sitting periods and whatnot. I do want to thank, in this instance, firstly, Sarin Solomonian from our office, who coordinated the program this year. She did a tremendous job. But also, very importantly, the Hagop Kortian Scholarship. The Hagop Kortian Scholarship is part of the ANCAU's internship program, and it tries to facilitate young people who want to work in politics or media, the costs that they might have to bear while they get some of the critical experience that they need. So, for example, if they want to volunteer at a politician's office with the aim of getting a job there one day, this internship program can fund their stay in Canberra, fund some of their activities while they're over there, in order for that to be less cumbersome for them and less of a burden financially, because obviously it is in our interest through programs such as Youth Advocates and our internship program to get more Armenians interested and involved in the political process. The Hagop Kortian Scholarship is a $10,000 annual commitment from the Kortian family in honor of their husband and father, the late Hagop Kortian, who was a founding force of Haitad. And from that $10,000, part of it for the second year running was dedicated to make the Youth Advocates Program a reality.
Hang on the same subject, could you inform us about Golston Government Program?
Sure. This also is an important part of our outreach initiatives at the ANCAU. What we do with Youth Advocates obviously targets university students. Golston Government is something we're running with Golston College, Hamaskane Golston College in Sydney, and specifically their Years 7, 8 and 9 students. And what we do is throughout the year, the ANCAU runs workshops with Years 7, 8 and 9 with the primary goal of basically introducing government and the influence politics has on the day-to-day lives of all of us and even the students. So we basically run different workshops. Year 7, for example, focuses on policy making and debates. So we usually set topics that have a yes and a no side. We split the Year 7 class into two political parties. Each of them elects their leader. Each of them researches their topic. And then in a future workshop, they debate that topic against the other side, the other party within their class. That debate is conducted in a parliamentary setting with a speaker, so they get a real feel of how government debate works. Year 8 and 9 this year, we took it to another level and we made it about an election. The election was held on December the 10th, but in the lead up to the election, we split Year 8 and we split Year 9 into two political parties. Each party elected their leaders. Each party elected their own policies of importance to them. You know, we had parties that focused on climate change, parties that focused on education issues like standardized testing. There were students that focused on issues such as starting school later than current time they start school, which was quite popular. They also focused on issues such as animal cruelty and also ending the cycle of genocide. So these parties elect their leader, who will participate in a final debate, after which the election will occur from the greater student body. Other than the leader, each party has researchers who focus on researching the topics and coming up with the policies, obviously with our assistance, about how, if they win the election, how their party will handle climate change, for example, or one of the other topics. And They also, in each party, have what we called campaigners. And these guys basically prepare posters, flyers, and they distribute it and hang them up around the school in order to attract attention to what their party stands for, what the policies are, all, of course, in the lead up to the election. And on election day, December the 10th, we had Year 8's two parties and their leaders specifically participate in the debate. And the same thing with Year 9. This debate was conducted by in front of the greater student body, who at the end of the debate voted on their chosen parties. And next year, the winner of Year 8 government, for example, that party will be government next year, and the party that lost will be in opposition next year as part of these government workshops. I think that the school should be commended for recognising the importance of introducing students at a young age to politics and the power of government before they have had a chance to decide where their career is going to head, in case some of them are interested in obviously studying courses and degrees that might interest, that might involve them in the political process at a future date. I will also say we had senior students participate in this as well. For example, the person who moderated the debate on election day was playing the part of a journalist, and she was a senior student at the school as well. So that's roughly what Gladstone Government is, and we're always excited to continue these sorts of initiatives and expand them in future years.
Hike ANCA's annual gala banquet, I presume it was a success?
It was. It was a success. I think we've had a big year. I think the Armenian-Australian community has had a big year in advocating for the issues that are important to us. Of course, we talk about genocide, but we should also mention that Artsakh was a major focus this year. And obviously, issues like this, these outreach initiatives in order to bring our community and make them more involved in the political process and motivate young people to engage politically, all of these, as well as what we've managed to achieve in terms of bilateral relations with Armenia, with Artsakh, and also helping sustain our community when it comes to public affairs. All of these issues, obviously, culmination of efforts from many members of our community, and the gala banquet is the opportunity for us to reflect on these and celebrate the achievements that we've had together. And obviously, it's also an important night to raise funds for Armenian-Australian advocacy efforts led by the Armenian National Committee for 2020. And in all of those areas, I think it was a success. One of the other aspects of the gala banquet that's very important is obviously us honouring those who have helped us throughout the year in public life and other areas to advance our issues. Because obviously, as much as our community wants to do from our side of the fence, we need people from the other side of the fence listening, understanding, and then spreading that that message to achieve tangible results. Thankfully, we were able to honour some very important names at this gala banquet. The highest award that the ANCAU gives at its annual gala is the Freedom Award. This year, we rewarded the Premier of New South Wales, Gladys Berejiklian. I know that it's very difficult to highlight one thing that the Premier has done for the Armenian cause because she's been such a long-standing servant of it. But this year, obviously, was the year that she also led her party, the first female to lead her party to an election victory in the state of New South Wales. We felt that that was an opportunity to honour the Premier with this award. She was also the keynote speaker at our event, and she had some very kind words to say about the Armenian National Committee, and we were very happy considering the audience included a lot of dignitaries from politics that she recalled her efforts advocating for the Armenian cause as a member of the ANCAU board 25 years ago. She also reflected on the achievements of the ANCAU this year, and when she spoke about Artsakh and her pride at seeing John Alexander become the first federal MP to visit Artsakh, she said that her status as an enemy of the state of Azerbaijan on the person non grata list of Aliyev was something she wore as a badge of honour. This was I think was one of the highlights of the banquet. We also honoured Tim Wilson as the Friend of the Year of the for the Armenian Australian community, and that was because of his all of his advocacy, especially on the issue of Armenian genocide over the last 12 months. He, of course, moved a motion in the House of Representatives in 2018, and we thought that this was a great opportunity to honour Tim Wilson, fresh, obviously, off his from his trip as part of the ANCAU delegation to Armenia in September. We also had a new award this year in our repertoire, and that award was named the Ben Bagdikian Media Award. Ben Bagdikian was an Armenian genocide survivor who became known as one of the most ethical journalists in the United States with his work with the Pentagon Papers, in particular at the Washington Post. Ben Bagdikian's family was approached by us. We asked them if we would be able to honour his late father by naming our media award after him, and they graciously accepted that honour. And we were able to give that award this year to Alan Jones, considering his ability to spread the truth of the Armenian genocide to possibly the widest audience that it has ever reached in the Australian public. Through his radio program and speaking about it, interviewing us twice during 2019, and also backing the Armenian Australian community for taking Scott Morrison to task.
Looking back 2019, August was a very busy month. First, we spoke about Right Council's friendship treaty with Artsakh, and then there was a high-ranking delegation from Artsakh. And then the same month, ANC announced the launch of Australian Friends of Artsakh. Could you recap the month of August 2019?
Yeah, it does feel like so long ago because of the fact that since then we've been to Armenia and the youth advocates and all the rest of it. But yes, it was a significant month. It was the most significant month in Australian advocacy of the cause of the Republic of Artsakh and the people of the Republic of Artsakh's right to self-determination. We obviously knew we would be hosting the highest level delegation from Artsakh to visit Australia, led by the Foreign Minister Mas Ismailian and accompanied by Tavit Ishvanyan, fellow Member of Parliament, and also Ardak Nersisyan, who is an advisor to the Foreign Minister. We were very keen to make this delegation a success. And in order to do so, we knew that there was some work that needed to be done before their arrival. And I think the Right Council motion, where they declared themselves a sister city with Stepanakert, the capital of Artsakh, was historic. And hot on the heels of that announcement, obviously, was when this delegation had that positive news to go on. And also, we had been working behind the scenes for several months, since the federal election, in fact, to establish what we would be announcing during delegation's visit, which is the Australian Friends of Artsakh. The Australian Friends of Artsakh is a network of high-profile Australians, those currently in public life, but people who are formerly in public life, people from academia, community leaders, religious leaders, and all of these people would be signing a document of membership to the Australian Friends of Artsakh, which included a promise from them to advocate for the rights to self-determination of the Armenians of the Republic of Artsakh. There were 40 names on the list at the time of announcement, and soon after that we announced another 7 inductees into the Australian Friends of Artsakh. So currently the number is close to 50. That was a significant announcement, obviously. The delegation's visit also included a special welcome at the federal parliament, considering the Australian government doesn't recognise the Republic of Artsakh. To have the parliament welcome the delegation from Artsakh, have meetings with them, and a luncheon in their honour, which included the participation of a government minister, several MPs from all sides of politics and senators as well, was a significant victory in terms of getting the issue of Artsakh front and centre in the federal parliament. There were meetings, of course, with the New South Wales Premier, who graciously hosted the delegation in her office, Gladys Berejiklian, and they also used this opportunity, the delegation, to honour two of the key people involved in advancing the Sister City motion in Ride and the recognition of the Republic of Artsakh by the Council of Ride in Mayor Jerome Luxell and Councillor Sarkis Yedelyan. Both of them were given medals on behalf of the State Minister of the Republic of Artsakh. So that would be a pretty accurate summary, I think, of the August efforts in benefit of Artsakh.
And to the visit of the delegation from Artsakh followed a reciprocal visit from Australia to Armenia and Artsakh. What were your impressions from the trip?
Sure. The delegation to Armenia was significant. It was obviously the most difficult thing for us to organize because unlike other community lobbies that have the resources to simply fund politicians to go to Armenia and, you know, participate in all of the things we had them participate in, we needed to rely on politicians who would be willing to fork out money from their own pockets that they could have used on other issues in order to visit Armenia and be part of our delegation. And thankfully, the four politicians who participated formed the first federal-led Australian delegation to Armenia. Trent Zimmerman, Tim Wilson, John Alexander, and also New South Wales parliamentarian Hugh McDermott. The delegation also included Armenian-Australian business people, partners of the Armenian National Committee, and also members of the Armenian National Committee of Australia Board, Armenian National Committee of New Zealand Board, and also a representative of the Republic of Artsakh to Australia in Mr. Kailar Mikhailian. I think the delegation was significant, not just in the fact that it happened, but also in the achievements and the context that it was able to bring home because of those achievements. We don't have direct bilateral relations between Australia and Armenia, as we know. There's no embassy here, and the Australian embassy to Armenia is located in Moscow. Therefore, inter-parliamentary bilateral relations was something that was in our control, something that we could actually effect through this sort of delegation. And the meetings that were held between the Australian delegation and their Armenian counterparts were very high level in nature. They met the President of Armenia, they met the Prime Minister of Armenia, the Foreign Minister of Armenia, the Speaker of the National Assembly, several members of the National Assembly, both from the government and the opposition. And in all of these meetings, they were able to advance the idea that Australia and Armenia should in fact cooperate at a more direct and robust level. There were also meetings between the administration and the members of our delegation. For example, Tim Wilson chairs the House Committee on Economics in the Australian Parliament. So he met with the Deputy Minister of Economy in Armenia. Trent Zimmerman chairs a similar committee on health in the Australian Parliament. He met with the Deputy Health Minister. John Alexander chairs a similar committee on infrastructure. He met with the infrastructure minister. There were conversations that ranged from double tax treaty between Australia and Armenia to bringing the initiative of compulsory chess in schools that Armenia does to Australia, which is something that John Alexander is looking at actioning through his advocacy. There were meetings, obviously, social level and also ones that involve business. The visit to Turmo, for example, began discussions to bring that school of technology to Australia, which is becoming one of Armenia's greatest educational exports. There were also touristic endeavours, obviously, as part of the trip, and our politicians were able to see the beauty of Armenia, the history of Armenia, the culture of Armenia. And we were happy to be there for the ride, to be able to chaperone them along that world. Importantly, I think most importantly, the most important achievement from this trip was the fact that we visited Artsakh. So the first federal-led Australian delegation to Armenia had representation in Artsakh as well. And that was despite a lot of pressure for that not to be the case. John Alexander became the first federal Australian parliamentarian to visit the Republic of Artsakh, joining a handful of people from the US, a handful of people from the UK, and a bunch of people from Europe as federal parliamentarians from Western democracies to visit the Republic of Artsakh, and by doing so, give the Republic the credibility that it deserves. Importantly, of course, John Alexander was joined by Hugh McDermott, a New South Wales parliamentarian. And since the trip, both gentlemen have been placed on the same persona non grata list, the blacklist of Azerbaijan's dictator Ilham Aliyev. And I'm sure they will wear it as a badge of honour, just like Gladys Berejiklian does, Jonathan O'Day does, Walt Secord, and a bunch of other state parliamentarians that have visited Artsakh in the past from Australia. I think the trip to Artsakh gave a better understanding of these politicians about what Artsakh is. It's not a war zone. It is a democracy. It is a place where the people recognise that the best way they will be able to hold on to their indigenous rights to freedom and self-determination on the lands of their forebears is by embracing a democracy, and the politicians were able to see that democracy. They were able to visit the schools, visit the centres, and also meet with the politicians that had been elected by the people as well.
Hike, in June, we spoke about Armenophobia in Azerbaijan. You wrote an article about the UEFA Europa League Cup in Baku and Henrik Mkhitaryan. Could you give us a background on the subject and the reasons you wrote the article?
Sure. Henrik Mkhitaryan, who now plays for Roma in Italy, at the time played for Arsenal. And Arsenal had a match scheduled, a final in fact, in Baku in Azerbaijan. And his safety could not be assured by Azerbaijani authorities. There were mixed messages being sent by Azerbaijan when the issue was being debated about Mkhitaryan playing or not playing in Azerbaijan because of his Armenian heritage. We believe that Europe's peak football governing body, UEFA, had made a grand error in judgment by staging a football match of this significance in the capital of a country that jails journalists, that attacks its neighbours because of their heritage. Honours people like Ramil Safarov, who axed an Armenian during a NATO peace exercise simply because he was Armenian. To expect people like Henrik Mkhitaryan to feel safe in that sort of environment was never going to be something that Henrik could have accepted. However, UEFA did not have the foresight before staging the final there, simply because of the dollars that it posed for their governing body. And I believe that that needed to be exposed. And we've seen so many sporting events and other events be taken to Azerbaijan and give the dictatorship a credibility it simply doesn't deserve. UEFA was just the latest in a long line to be doing that. And this needed to be brought to the public's eye. Thankfully, Arsenal, being such a popular football club, well-supported football club in the UK, had their fans also drafting petitions and bringing attention to this issue as well. We had our own petition that was promoted by Serge Tankian, among others, on social media to bring people to become more aware of what Azerbaijan is and not just be veiled by footballing bodies and other bodies that might be giving it the credibility it doesn't deserve.
Hike, thank you for the interview. Thank you for always being ready to talk to us during the year. My best wishes to you and your family, and we'll meet again next year.
Thank you, Vaya. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you, your listeners, and thank you for following our activities and bringing it to a wider audience throughout 2019.
My guest was Hayk Kayserian, Executive Director of the Armenian National Committee of Australia.
Կուզես լսել նման բաժիններ, կընտրե Apple Podcast-ի, Google Podcast-ի, Spotify-ի վրա, կամ որտեղեն որ podcast-ը կլսես։